As I have grown older, I have discovered a lot of things, not all of them pleasant things, but I have discovered as I have grown older how much I need Holy Week, how much I need this week before Easter. It has become more and more meaningful to me the longer I have lived, because I recognize that the roller coaster of Holy Week, going from height to depth and even greater height, is an awful lot like the roller coaster of life. And in Holy Week, it's like we get a super concentrated spiritual journey that covers all of those spiritual extremes and everything in between. And if we're only attending to what happens on the Sundays, we enjoy the acclaim of Palm Sunday, and we rightly celebrate the Easter resurrection as the centrally defining act of the Christian story. And we might tend to skip over the other events of the week. But by missing or by avoiding those more troublesome, shall we say, parts of the story, we miss the witness of the Gospels in the week that leads up to Easter. Another thing that has become much more treasured to me as I grow older is that enduring claim of Christianity that Jesus Christ was fully God and fully human, not half and half, but 100% and 100%. It's kind of like the Christian koan, like those Zen koans. It's a paradox that is never quite understandable, but when one lives with it, it opens to greater and greater spiritual insight. This claim that somehow Jesus Christ was both divine and human is a nearly inexhaustible source of inspiration, because the more I live, the more I want a God who knows what it's like to be a human being, and one that can show me how to be more fully human. I want a God that will go with me to good times and bad times, and will even go to the places with me that I do not want to go. And I think that's a pretty good guide to Holy Week. Because the one that Christianity declares is God incarnate actually went there. And because God went there, I know I can too. There is nowhere I might go, nowhere in a human life, that Jesus has not gone first. That is the lesson of Holy Week from beginning to end. I want to lead us in some ways, in an extended meditation on some of those scenes during this coming week, to try to unpack that a little bit more, that somehow in this life, in those scenes, might we not just see something that happened back then a long time ago to someone else that we remember, but it is something that happens in our lives, in every human life. So I'd invite you into this reflection on a few of the scenes of this Holy Week. And the first one is the scene of today, which we call the triumphal entry, Palm Sunday, when Jesus enters on a humble donkey and is surrounded by cheering crowds. The praise, the adulation, the acclaim, if there was ever a moment when Jesus could have seized power, or as we might say more politely in our day, when Jesus could have leveraged his influence, it was right now. It was at that moment of Palm Sunday. The music of the chanting, the adoring fans, The intoxication of popularity is a powerful drug, isn't it? But like all drugs, it has a downside. It has a shadow side. To believe the hype of what people are saying about you, to forget who you really are, who you are really called to be, and to become what others want you to be. To become what those crowds of fans and admirers wanted, to be the most powerful Messiah that they expected, and not a deliverer on a donkey that failed everyone's expectations. When the intoxication of popularity and power entices so strongly, will I have the courage, will we have the courage to follow where the one on the donkey will lead? There is nowhere I might go where Jesus has not gone first. After entering the holy city, Jesus does what turns out to be a very dangerous thing. The Gospel of John sets the event at an earlier trip to Jerusalem, but in the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, it's after this entrance into the holy city with a cheering crowd. What is the first thing that Jesus does? He goes to the temple and he makes a scene. He overturns and drives out the money changers. He turns the tables over and he drives out the money changers. The moment, this is the moment when we see Jesus at his least, quote, meek and mild. Fuming with righteous anger and activism, disrupting the ways things have always been done. You know, most biblical scholars believe that if there was a single act which was the last straw that precipitated Jesus' ultimate death, it was this moment. This was the moment where Jesus had gone too far to be tolerated any longer. It was this moment. Sure, you can feed the hungry, you can heal the sick, that's great. You can teach about love and justice. You mess around with our traditions, that makes us a little uncomfortable, but things at the temple are working. They're working for us. It's meeting our needs, the needs of the insiders and the money changers. Not so much meeting the needs of the Gentile outsiders who actually wanted to pray in the temple but had nowhere to pray. There's an activist slogan. You've probably seen it on signs and bumper stickers. If you aren't outraged, you are not paying attention. If you're not outraged, you are not paying attention. What do you notice when you pay attention? When you pay attention, do you ever notice that anything needs changing? Changing for the sake of love. When you notice, do you sadly nod your head and cluck your tongue saying, someone really should do something about that? The opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is not anger. The opposite of love is meh. The opposite of love is apathy and complacency. Do we have enough love to get angry? Do we have enough love to disrupt the status quo? Will you, will I, love enough to risk everything? There is nowhere in my life that I may go that Jesus has not gone first. Every week, we share communion. in remembrance of a promise that was given only a few days after that incident at the temple. A promise that somehow, it's still impossible to actually adequately explain, that somehow the presence that was in Christ still meets us in bread and cup. That night that turned out to be the final meal that Jesus shared with his loved ones. In Matthew, Mark, and Luke, it's the Passover meal. In John, it's a meal before the Passover. We don't get a description of the meal, actually. But in John, we get the scene prior to the meal where Jesus washes the feet of the disciples. I wonder if Jesus really knew it was his last meal. He surely knew trouble had to have been afoot after that whole demonstration at the temple. When he gathered with these friends and family, what did he do? We have an evening of such intimacy, of bodily intimacy, that is so terribly and achingly human, I think we have trouble bearing it. Most churches, including MCC Portland, regularly or at least occasionally on Holy Thursday, on Maundy Thursday evening, do a foot washing. And it makes everybody uncomfortable. In fact, we did it for the first few years I was here, and people stopped coming. That's just blatantly true, because it makes us uncomfortable. The intimacy that's displayed at this last meal by Jesus towards his friends and followers makes us uncomfortable, and that's the point. Woe to us the moment that the example of Jesus fails to make us a little bit uncomfortable. We will have created God in our own image. Let's face it, our bodies make us uncomfortable. But there are so often times in life that our words run out and we have to touch. That night is the night that we remember Jesus with a body, and we remember Jesus with our bodies. We repeat the words every week, "This is my body given for you." A body that reaches out to touch and be touched. So ungodlike, but it's so human. There is nowhere in my life I might go that Jesus has not gone first. Who has not had a tortured night of prayer? In the dark, so dark you can't even see it. Back up one. That's a picture of the garden at night. Probably accurate, very, very dark. The Garden of Gethsemane. Have you ever cried so hard you thought your head would burst? Out of grief, out of fear. On the lips of this Jesus, we hear the words, "Take this cup away." A tortured prayer, and then a surrender. Then, to be betrayed by a kiss. Anyone here ever been betrayed by a kiss of one whom you've loved? Seized and arrested. There is nowhere in my life or your life that you can go that Jesus has not gone first. Then, tried on trumped up false charges, fabricated stories, People who stood in front of others and lied about what you said and did, or at least twisted the truth towards their own ends. And your closest friend even denies that they know you at all. There is nowhere in life you can go that Jesus has not been first. And death will touch every life. But what is a good death? I think a lot of us hope to die peacefully in our sleep after a long and fulfilling life, perhaps surrounded by those that love us, touching us with care and compassion. Few would dare say to die executed and publicly humiliated is a good death. But in the church, we call it Good Friday. If this one hanging on the cross of Good Friday is God, then God knows about a death that most of us will never be able to know or imagine. There is nowhere in human life that anyone can go that Jesus has not gone first. The best news of Holy Week is we know its promised end. The journey from the height of acclaim through the deepest and most painful places to be raised to new life, it bears the promise that there is nowhere that I will ever go that Jesus has not gone first. Those crowds on Palm Sunday could not imagine where the one who entered with such a claim, where that one would end only days later. They had no idea where the one on the donkey was about to lead them, where following the one on the donkey would lead them. It would lead them into deeper and fuller humanity with all of its joys and all of its pains. It would lead them through depth, through height. Does knowing that in Jesus God went there first give us courage to live our own lives more fully? The journey through this week, this holy week, is a holy human week. It's a journey with God, touching the places in our own lives, in every life, in the life of the world, touching, knowing, blessing, redeeming them all. And it's in its complete and utter humanity that the week is made holy.